WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This week, we're featuring a series on the history of the blues with our rock historian, Ed Ward. The recordings he's playing come from two blues box sets released by the Smithsonian Institution. Today, we hear about how the blues met the challenge of another new music, rock and roll.
Well, I heard you knew that's good to rockin' tonight. Well, I heard you knew that's good to rockin' tonight. I'm gonna hold my baby as tight as I can. Tonight she'll know I'm a mighty, mighty man. I heard you knew that's good to rockin' tonight. I say, oh, meet me here tonight.
The standard explanation says that rock and roll killed blues dead in its tracks, that black teenagers turned toward more modern sounds, and that blues artists played to older and older audiences until the music disappeared. A convenient scenario, but it's not true. For one thing, it ignores the fact that in the mid-50s, American music was still regional, and in the region that was giving us Elvis, the blues was still a vital part of the scene.
Train I ride, 16 coaches long. Well, that long black train carried my baby home.
Junior Parker was one of the Beale Streeters, a sometimes supergroup that played on Memphis Black Main Street, and so was his friendly rival, Bobby Blue Bland. Both men found a way to combine the big band sound of early 50s jump blues with the aggression of a well-played guitar solo into a style that saw their careers last for a couple of decades. Also on Beale Street, another member of the Beale Streeters was making his mark on history.
Thank you so much. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we want to go way back. Way back.
Riley King called himself the Blues Boy on his radio show, and as B.B. King, became the most astonishing guitarist Memphis had ever produced. His incredible phrasing and dynamics, along with his uncanny feel for what was contemporary, also kept him on the charts long after blues was having its obituary written. In Chicago, the blues scene met the challenge of rock and roll by getting even more aggressive.
Walking down through the wood. Yeah, the first time I met the blues. Blues, you know, I was walking down through the wood. Yeah, my house was blue. Blues, you know, you dumped me.
Buddy Guy was a young guitarist Muddy Waters had taken under his wing after he'd arrived in Chicago from Louisiana, and he soon hooked up with Junior Wells, who had inherited the harmonica crown after Little Walter's death, a partnership that drew a younger crowd into the clubs. These were the years of the British invasion, and if Muddy Waters wasn't selling as many records as he used to, well, neither was Frank Sinatra. No serious blues observer in Chicago would have called the blues there dead. And in fact, other regions made their contributions during this period. From Crowley, Louisiana, James Moore, known professionally as Slim Harpo, wound up on the pop charts in 1966. Baby Scratch My Back fit right into pop radio's mix, as of course did instrumentals. Texas-born Freddie King made a career out of catchy numbers like Hideaway. So did another Texas player, Albert Collins. By the time Collins recorded Tongue Lashing in 1969, blues was in fact losing its popularity with young blacks. I was derided by some black teenagers in 1965 for my interest in what they called that old Caledonia-fied stuff, and they in turn introduced me to the Temptations. Still, the fact that I was interested in it was a symptom of another chapter in the history of the blues. I'll tell you about it tomorrow.
Rock historian Ed Ward, I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.